Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Living Arts of Tulsa presents the OK Electric Festival this weekend, an exploration of electroacoustic music and this growing subgenre of contemporary classical music. Through the two-evening festival, there will be performances, lectures, and composer forums featuring Oklahoma-based composers as well as national and internationally known and based composers, sound artists, and performers. This year's festival has a theme, Nature versus Nurture, and will feature three world premieres from New York composer Ryan Chase, as well as Oklahoma composers Charlotte Dumasil and Mitchell James Highfill, along with performances by the New York City Warp Trio, Tulsa Camerata and Tulsa Symphony Orchestra musicians, percussionist Ricardo Cuello de Sosa, and unknown tone record artist. Here's a sampling of the music to be heard. Here's a snippet of Alexander Gardner's Bloom. That's just a short sampling of the music to be performed at this year's OK Electric Festival this weekend at Living Arts. The festival is once again being curated by noted local composer Noam Feingold, who is also the director of the Barthelmess Conservatory. He teaches at Tulsa Community College as well as the University of Tulsa, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Noam Feingold, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
And you're once again curating the OK Electric Festival. And it looks like this festival is continuing to grow and evolve. This one, you're going to have several world premieres at the festival.
Yeah, that's fun. And we have a theme this year where we didn't have a theme last year. So to me, if it's anything that shows some growth, it's a coherent narrative that runs through everything.
And that theme is nature versus nurture.
Correct.
Now, we know what that means in most of the world, but what does this mean for electronic music?
I think I approach this very much as a composer because one always wants to sort of engage with some theme or topic and see what a musical equivalent looks like. And I think that curation is very much a form of low-grade composition in the sense that you're organizing an experience where you're getting somebody from point A to point B over time, right? And hopefully it's a positive experience and an experience that involves some form of personal journey for sure, but personal growth, I think, is one of the main goals of anything. And so I approached this theme, which I felt to be sort of present in a lot of different forms in our lives. For some people, I think we don't want to have a conversation about it at all. And that already is very interesting from an artistic perspective because it does conjure some texture of engaging with science, which is a very charged topic. It shouldn't be, but it is. And then, you know, you only get more specific from there, and then you're just going to get more and more disagreement, which I think musically speaking is actually something very important. You can't really have music of any sort without somebody putting out a very strong opinion into the world, usually in sound. And so we don't have to make any sort of charged statement, but I think that anything worth its salt in the arts is responding to something charged.
Now, when you say people don't want to have this conversation, I mean, it could be two ways. It could be, I don't want to talk about this music, I just want to experience it.
Right.
But you also say it's also like, I don't want to crack the door open to even go into that room in a way.
Well, that just makes me think about something that we see every once in a while, which is this idea of, well, let's keep music here in some kind of safe place where it doesn't engage with something outside of itself. And the way that I think about that, it's actually a false thing to do. I think that we pretend that we can do that. I don't think it's actually possible to do it. even if you're not doing that, you're actively avoiding it, which is in and of itself a response to a charged topic. So I don't think you'll ever fully get away from that.
Mm. So how does this music address this theme of nature versus nurture? I mean, there are a couple of pieces that actually involve nature in a way, in natural elements.
Well, I thought about the theme because there is something already innately present in the pieces that I was looking at. So it was just arising from the repertoire that I thought sounded great already and was doing something interesting musically. And so there's multiple levels to it. The most basic and obvious level to me was this idea of combining live performers with electronics, which is really the running theme for the most part of this festival, both this year and last year. So that is already sort of an analogy to nature versus nurture. Obviously not the most basic one. There is sort of an organic versus inorganic element to it. There's also one of, you know, technology versus man, which I think no matter where you stand on anything political today, we certainly feel that aspect in every facet of our lives. And so I think it would be a mistake to do a festival that engages technology without also doing some level of digging for what it means to be engaging with technology.
And certainly music in the last 40 or 50 years has been increasingly an evolution towards that technology sort of running every part of music now.
I agree. And I think it's very important if you care about classical music, especially, but by no means at the exclusion of everything else. But I think that classical is still sort of grasping with technology, despite the fact that violins are technology. They just happen to be technology from a few hundred years ago. And there is a question of what it means to be running a festival like this at this point in time. I think that we have the danger of getting stuck in the past with programming pieces centered around technology. There is some measure of public understanding of what that means, but it's a bit of an echo, I think, is what we usually engage with. We think we're engaging with the thing, but we're really engaging with, say, a perception that was put out into the public sphere 40 or 50 years ago. So much of the work that I consider I have to do in curating this festival is replacing that echo with a different one, which is one that engages much more clearly and directly with, say, compositional preoccupations of today. And we are at the point where technology, at least for today's composers, in classical music, it's there. People take classes on how to do it. It's no longer really a political statement to make it, though it can often feel that way if you've never engaged with it before and you're used to using Beethoven as your benchmark for what classical music is.
Well, it's just as early as 30 years ago. I mean, this was this little niche. And if you went off in that direction, it was like going down a rabbit hole of, you know, I mean, that was how it was viewed within the classical music world. Yet every other type of music is usually very nearly, almost universally embraced technology, if nothing more to use electronics to recreate sounds that you couldn't put together on a stage.
Now, I do think that is a sphere where we have actively depoliticized the politics of the past, which is to say the political act of making an assertion of I will write electronic music and not orchestra music, right? That was a political statement. I think that that's no longer, for the most part, a political statement. We have worked for the last few decades to just make it a medium. Because if you go back and look at composers' writings from the last several hundred years, something that does tie Beethoven to the present is, I'm not particularly interested in what your expectations of what my job is. My job is to be interested by something and then show you what I'm interested in. And so this is purely an extension of that. So we in this field have gone through a heavy process of depoliticizing the use of a medium to make a message.
And what this festival seems to show from some of the pieces I've heard is this seamless melding of acoustic music and electronic music and electronic instruments.
That certainly is my goal, to actively program it that way. And just to go back to something we talked about a few minutes ago, I want to make sure that it's clear that I'm not putting classical music on a pedestal to the exclusion of sound artists, popular music. I think that technology now very clearly runs in all genres, no matter what. You can hear it in jazz. You can hear Nicholas Payton using basically the same electronic sounds and processes in some of his albums from even more than 10 years ago, actually, as you would a classical composer today getting commissioned by any of the major classical music venues or ensembles or organizations. I will say that popular music and sound artists, they have an advantage over classical musicians, which is they started the game not having to go through the act of depoliticizing. It's always just been, let's run with it. And so in some ways, I would say classical music has been catching up to that and working for the same kind of fluency that someone working on a laptop to compile sounds for the last 20 years outside of classical music has already been doing.
Yeah. You mentioned Nicholas Payton. I was thinking of some of his things where he's using looping technology, playing with himself, basically. I remember when that came into jazz, there was some political issues with that, but that seems to have moved on, and it seems like it's moved on in the classical sphere as well.
For the most part, at least as far as a lot of composers pretty much between generations are all pretty much engaging in it right now. I think that classical music audiences, the job from my perspective now is to inform people that this is now normal and standard. And just about every composer out there composing music now has some piece for name your instrument and electronics or tape playback together with this or for electric guitar or something. You know, so it's really interesting to think about the different fragmented trajectories of classical development. I personally happen to be very interested in how this fits into the classical music world because it's so consciously thought about. But at the same time, you know, Jeff Tweedy from Wilco has been doing soundtracks to films with technology for several decades now, and we all love Wilco for the most part, I think. I mean, I certainly do, and I definitely grew up in rock and roll, so yeah. I had a very different trajectory into it from other classical composers because I came from rock. I went from being interested in technology to being interested in acoustics, but there is a lot of acoustical interest that drives the musical choices in electronic music, and I think that that's something very interesting to think about, especially if you subscribe to the stereotype that it's just beeps and boops. But actually, a lot of electronic music written today is very much dependent on information and sounds generated by the overtone series. Stuff that, right, you're a trombone player, yeah. So you've been thinking about overtones just to play your instrument your entire life.
It's nothing but an overtone series.
Exactly. Where you have to pick them out of the air and just be like, I'm going to play this one now.
Yeah.
That's actually very electronic in a lot of ways. So.
Who knew?
Yeah. My job is to just lift the lid off of a bunch of boxes that people didn't know existed. And I just go, all right, here's a bunch of stuff coming out of there.
My guest today is Noam Feingold, curator for the OK Electric Festival, which will take place this weekend at Living Arts, featuring groups from New York City. You're going to have world premieres. You're going to have a variety of different pieces involving electronics. For example, let's just talk about some of the things that people will hear this weekend. There'll be three world premieres. What do you know about those pieces?
So one of them is by Ryan Chase, who's a young composer who's really establishing himself in the classical music world. He was a fellow at Tanglewood. He's a visiting professor at Colgate University right now. We actually met years and years ago at the Bowdoin Festival, where we were both students. But he's also a trumpet player, and so he wrote a piece for trumpet and electronics so that we would have a play on the traditional fanfare to open up an activity, but it's our version of that. And then we have a piece by Mitch Heifel, who's actually one of my students at TCC. And he has worked in the past with Richard Ramey, the principal bassoon of the Tulsa Symphony. And so he wrote a piece for Richard for bassoon and live electronics that's based on 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Kind of cool.
Yeah. Obviously, there's like a sort of water connection to that. You'll find that there are a lot of layers, but it also opens up an interesting conversation about spaces and how they fit into this conversation of nature versus nurture. And so I engaged with that on a slightly more philosophical level, looking at this concept of real versus imaginary spaces. obviously, from one vantage point, when you try to represent or engage with a real place in sound, that's already a form of abstraction. Well, what about when you're engaging with a space that never physically existed, right? Like a space in a novel, for example. Mm-hmm. So I found that very interesting. And then we have a piece by Charlotte Dumesnil, who lives in Oklahoma City. And she wrote a piece called The Elements for cellist Matt Majorkirth to play. And obviously that fits in a very clear way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it runs the gamut in terms of those pieces. And most of the other ones are either by sound artists or sort of traditional composers. I think that we're now at the time where we can just say a traditional composer has written a piece for violin and electronics or cello and electronics. And this is just something that's in everyone's list of works. You've got your orchestra pieces, you've got your chamber music, duos, quintets, piece for solo instrument and electronics. It's now just almost a very yawn-worthy list of instrumentation, and I'm just putting it together as though it were some kind of revolutionary thing, but really with the goal of, again, continuing to depoliticize and just show people how interesting this repertoire is and how fun it is. Yeah,
opening a door. Composers, you mentioned, we should mention you have a John Cage piece. Mm-hmm. It's a little out there, I'd say.
It's out there, but usually when we describe something as out there, I think that we use that as code for unpleasant.
No.
This is, and I know that you didn't mean that at all, but I think that for our listeners, right, we might have the instinct to maybe have a reaction to something and use a coded language to kind of soften the blow.
It requires listeners to take a jump for, you know, if you come in expecting music to be a keyboard or
right.
acoustic instruments or even a synthesizer or some sort of synthesized sound, this is a very different thing. It's amplified plants.
It is, which already sounds kind of funny, and it makes me at least smile every time I talk about it.
No, but you think about it, and you know, you well know this is if you think of a violinist playing pizzicato,
right,
and you have a cactus in front of you, you can play pizzicatos on a cactus.
In fact, I would challenge people to tell the difference. People who are not your traditional classical music concert goer to tell the difference between the sound of a plucked cactus spike compared to a pizzicato on a violin. It's quite a difficult challenge, I think. I would say also on the Cage spectrum, right? Because he has very traditional music
right.
for keyboards, for string quartet. He studied with Schoenberg, right? So he's not even that. And they did not get along, and Schoenberg thought he had no ear for anything, which that opens up a different can of worms in and of itself to say, oh, well, maybe that's interesting that he's the guy who wrote the piece for 4 minutes and 33 seconds of quiet. And so this sort of sits halfway between his traditional string quartet and his piece for 12 radios, mm-hmm. for example. But it fits into our theme very obviously, I think. And a lot of that was also about creating a really enjoyable experience for our audiences. That's a really key component to this festival. Many of the pieces that you'll see will be experiential. Listening to them on headphones, as much as our logo this year is, you know, a big pair of headphones, mm-hmm. which I think is a great symbol, but there is nothing that replaces the live experience. And I would say that this is actually amplified, no pun intended, when you're listening to an electroacoustic concert, because this piece is about setting up a bunch of plants around you. And then when you put a microphone to them, you start to listen to them in a very different way. So it brings the musical out of something that is not inherently musical. And that's a lot of what Cage tries to do. This piece, I think, succeeds marvelously. And at the same time, it's very interesting to watch and very enjoyable to watch.
Yeah. I thought we'd switch to Sarah Novotka. This is a great piece. You were talking about making this a really enjoyable, pleasant experience. This is a piece I think that nearly anybody could relate to.
I think so. Yeah, and she's a sound artist working in Oklahoma City or Norman area. And yeah, this piece, it's for voice and electronics. I find it very mellow, but it's very, very thoughtful and searching for something and engaging with the, you know, the pain of loss. And I think that that's very apparent from the sound that it generates.
What's the name of this piece? And why don't we hear a bit?
It's called In Paradisum.
almost like a heartbeat there at the end, where yeah. it starts being a part of it. It was very ethereal music. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I listen to it, it just makes me think about monastic choir music. But, you know, with this also post-Beethoven musical creator as sort of sensory organ out in the world kind of a thing, it blends that stuff very well to me. And I love that piece. That's on Unknown Tone Records, by the mm-hmm. way. It features very easily in our continuing collaboration with them because they feature a lot of artists like that.
And you're going to have after parties with DJs and ambient music and all sorts of things, right?
Yes and no. The thing about that is I wanted to engage with, you know, a lot of different aspects of technology culture and electronic music culture. And so the after party is kind of a popular culture trope. And so I was thinking about that as an object which can be engaged with as well. So, for example, well, each night we begin by talking to some of the composers who are featured on the program. And then we do an hour set of, you know, various sound artists, but also classical composers performed by members of the Tulsa Symphony, Tulsa Camerata, some of the sound artists themselves. Everything is very well integrated. Students from the University of Tulsa will be playing as well. And then the second set is this engagement with the concept of the after party. And so the set on Friday night, we will have a DJ who DJs around town, DJ Aphistophase. And she will be collaborating with our visiting piano trio, a traditional violin, cello, piano trio, who have studied with some of the great musicians of the 20th century, actually. The cellist studied with David Sawyer from the Guarneri mm-hmm. Quartet. The pianist, I think, even still currently studies with Gilbert Kalish. But this project that they do is they tend to not play traditional piano trio repertoire. So they compose a lot of music themselves. They often play on electronic versions of traditional piano trio instruments, electric cello, electric violin,
and a keyboard.
Some version of a keyboard, which mm-hmm. can be any number of things. And they're also really great improvisers, actually. And so that second set will be them improvising with the DJ on sounds from nature.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then the second night, they'll play their Suite for Amplified Piano Trio with drum set.
Yeah. And this is the Warp Trio, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. And so when it's an after party, it's not these usual ambient music. It'll be a very different ambient music.
Right. It's like we took the musical elements that might be present there and then sort of remixed them from the vantage point of staying sort of in tune with the concept of the festival and the fact that, you know, this is about engaging with a lot of ideas and to a great degree deriving personal pleasure from doing that.
What's also interesting, you mentioned the Tulsa Symphony players and the Tulsa Camerata performers. There's a lot of people who've come and said, I want to be a part of this, obviously.
Yeah, and a lot of the same performers from last year are playing with us again today. I work with them in various capacities throughout the year, but you strike a really interesting point, which is that whenever you go see the Tulsa Symphony or Signature Symphony, you think you're just seeing symphony players, but really every person on that stage has a whole inner life of repertoire that they wish that they could perform. And this actually has created a venue for many of those personal projects where they have this and this piece on their wish list to perform. So that's some of what
are there any of those that are happening this weekend that you can think of?
Yeah. So for example, David Carter is going to play Steve Reich's New York Counterpoint mm-hmm. for, I believe it's 13 clarinets, but it's most often performed with the clarinetist recording those clarinets and then playing to the accompaniment mm-hmm. in person. So we're going to have that. He also played that on the Camerata concert. Sometimes it gives the performers a chance to engage with repertoire they wouldn't have otherwise. I asked Jesus Villarreal from the Symphony and Camerata to play Angelica Negron's Isla Mágica for solo double bass with electronics, where she uses a lot of sampled bass sounds. I think that's a sub theme that's arising from this festival, is this really cool idea where maybe a live performer is playing with a tape or with live electronics, but some facet of that is also a sampled version of either themselves or another player having recorded stuff. So there's this cross-technological conversation happening between performers.
Yeah. It sounds like it's going to be a really great festival. Lots of interesting, thought-provoking music that's going to be a part of it.
We're going to have a great time.
And what are the hours? It starts Friday at around 6:30, the same time on Saturday?
Exactly. It's basically the same format each night. So 6:30, we'll have a conversation with the composers. 7:30, we'll start the first set of pieces that engage with the theme, and then we'll have the sort of after-party thing with the DJ and Warp Trio. And I'm also really looking forward to David Accard's piece, Agua Electronica.
Mm-hmm.
Which it'll be the same player that's playing the cage, and also a piece by Konstantinos Karathanasis, who is an absolute electronic music specialist at the University of Oklahoma.
This is Ricardo.
Yeah, Ricardo Coelho de Souza.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's going to be performing a lot. I think many members of our community have seen him perform in various venues, the University of Tulsa. I know he plays with various orchestras around the region.
And what's really interesting about this piece is it is a piece for amplified water and electronics.
It is, which already sounds like you're in danger of getting electrocuted. I think there is a little bit of that tension sort of present in the undertone of the piece, which makes it even more fascinating. But what I really wanted to let everyone know about that piece is that the composer of that piece, David Accard, is coming up here from Texas. And it's not really just a performance of the piece. This is a work in progress. It's constantly shifting and changing. And David's going to talk about the sort of open quality of the piece. There are inherent musical contradictions and philosophical questions of writing a piece with water that he's constantly re-engaging with every time it's being presented.
I would assume it'd be sort of aleatoric, where it's like, you know, slap the water here or stir the water for so many seconds or something like that. But I have no idea how it's actually notated.
He's a great person to talk to about that. He's going to have a slightly more interactive bent to it. And so he's going to present that piece at the end of the first set on Friday night. So if this sounds interesting to anybody listening, definitely go. And I think he might even let people try. This is basically an instrument that he's built. It's not just a question of amplifying water, but the question becomes, how do you create essentially the violin body of this instrument and make it go from an aspect of nature into something which is inherently human and personal, which is the act of making a statement with some element of nature.
Yeah. If people want more information about the OK Electric Festival, it's livingarts.org. I assume that's the best way to get there.
Yeah. They can buy tickets directly from the website there. They want to go to livingarts.org/OK-electric-2017, and they can see the full list of everything happening. You get a slight discount if you buy tickets ahead of time. And we look forward to just having a really good time with everyone around this very interesting and enjoyable repertoire.
All right, Noam, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rich.
Noam Feingold is the director of the Barthelmess Conservatory, a composer, and the curator for this year's OK Electric 2017 to be held at Living Arts this Friday and Saturday. For more information on the festival, visit livingarts.org/OK-electric-2017. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. And the views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.